You're listening to STB Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Smita Mishra, and welcome to this episode of STB Radio. I will be your host today for this episode in a series of interviews that we are conducting with several speakers who will be attending our upcoming STB Spring Conference. STP Con will be in San Francisco from April 4th through 7th this year. Be sure to check out stpcon.com, where you can learn more about the conference, the speakers, our special events, and our conference pricing. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram, where you can find us with the handle Software Test Pro. So let's meet our guest. Today we are interviewing someone who is a very popular leader in the automation world, and who has done a lot of work with STPCon. We have with us Paul Grzafi. Paul, is that right? How I took your name?
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah, oh, great. So Paul is the Automation Program Architect and Manager for Revenue Cycle Technology at MedAssets. It's a healthcare performance improvement company. His career has been focused on the creation and deployment of automated test strategies, frameworks, tools, and platforms. So without taking much of your time, I would like to start with a quick introduction of our guest today. So Paul, let us know a little bit about you, how you got into testing, and anything else.
Sure. Thank you. So, I am the automation program architect and manager for MedAssets. And what I like to do is I like to consider myself and my team as software pediatricians. Most of us have heard the old joke that the developers are the ones who birth the baby, and the testers are the ones that come in and say, your baby's ugly.
I like that term.
Great. So what I prefer to look at us as is the doctors, the professionals that come in and help that fledgling, that newborn software grow into maturity, into something that we can sell and be proud of to our customers and our clients. And as you said, I have spent my entire career focused on automation quite by chance at first. I was recruited out of grad school by a company called Bell Northern Research, which after many name changes and other things wound up being called Nortel. And I spent 16 years there. And I started out as an automation developer quite by chance. They needed a C++ developer who knew about parsing. And that's what my focus in grad school was language theory and parsing theory. What we did was we developed a multi-protocol automation platform to aid in the testing of our telecom products. In that world at that time, things were a lot different. You almost had to do something homegrown, because when the new specifications for the telephony interfaces came out, the developers and the testers and the automation people and the tool vendors got all the specifications at the same time. So we couldn't really wait in a lot of cases for the external tool vendors and box vendors to be ready for us, because that was going to be too late in the cycle. So we were having to develop the tools in tandem while the product software was being developed a lot of times. So that was an interesting world to be in. When that company declared bankruptcy, I decided it was probably time to move on to something else. I spent about a year and a half at a company called TradeStation, which you can think of it as like Scottrade or E-Trade, but on steroids. At least at that time, it was geared mostly towards day traders and options traders. After that, I went to GameStop, where I was performing a similar role as to what I have now, where I'm the manager and architect of the automation framework there. And then the current role that I have, it maps very similar, but there are many more products and users for what we're building at MedAssets than we were at GameStop. Additionally, I am an advisor to this organization, the Software Test Professionals Organization, and I'm largely responsible for the STPCon automation sessions. When I say responsible, I help vet the session, the abstracts that come in, and approve which ones we decide we're going to take, and then attempt to order them in some sort of logical manner during the conference itself.
Wow. So you just said in those times, like, how long have you been doing automation?
I started in 93. So what's that? That's 20. Wow. That's almost 23 years.
That's some time. Yes. So that justifies you saying in those days. So Paul, let's talk about the conference more. Mm-hmm. And I see if you have some great workshops and sessions on automation. Frankly, it really excites me to look at all the overall speakers and the schedule of this conference. It this could very well be our best STP so far. And we have the most number of automation sessions in it. So I would like for you to share with our audience a bit more about each of them, if possible, like since you're also the designer, the architect of how the automation sessions get placed through the conference, I would really like for you to add, like, who all should attend, what should we expect, something like which session is best suited for which kind of audience, which helps our listeners to actually pick up their sessions. Overall, kind of trying to ask you why you placed them in that order, if there was one, and how should our audience and listener actually pick their sessions?
Okay, so we'll hit those sort of one at a time there, who should attend. So really anyone directly or indirectly associated with automation. We have purposely chosen sessions that are going to be, or if you look at the sessions as a whole, they cover a broad range of things from different levels to different interest areas. So really anyone that's got some sort of association with automation would be a candidate for anyone to go to a session. People just getting started, to experienced practitioners looking to evolve their initiatives or extend on the successes that they already have. Also for testing leaders looking for how to talk about automation with their non-testing peers. Automation can be sort of this, either this black box or the sinkhole of money or this magic wand. And if you don't know how to talk about it with your peers in a way that they can understand, it's going to remain sort of this black art money sink that people think it is. And then we intentionally designed the schedule to have something pretty much for everyone at every level of automation. And one of the ways I did that was I looked at it and I said, what would I like to go see? What would challenge me? And what would challenge Smita? Which would challenge Mike Lyles? People that I know that have deep automation backgrounds, what would be something they would look at and go, hey, that's cool, I want to adopt that. Or, hey, wait a minute, I don't quite understand how that works. Let me ask some questions there. So that we have interest levels at every level. And then again, for the order of the sessions, what I tried to do was I tried to make it flow from the more basic stuff to the more advanced stuff. And where logistical constraints are not in the way, there's certain things you can't have at certain times just because there aren't enough rooms or you have too many automation sessions, so you have to run some things concurrently. But I tried to make that flow because that was some feedback that we got, I think, from the New Orleans conference that there didn't seem to be that the topics were good, but the flow wasn't there. And people seemed to want to have something where they could start on day one at the, you know, the beginner level, and by the end of day two, they've gotten more advanced, some more advanced things that built off the previous stuff. So we've tried to do that as well. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said, we do have a lot of automation sessions this time. So we did have to run a few of them concurrently. So when we had to make them run concurrently, I tried to make the concurrent ones distinct in some way, either have a basic one concurrent with an advanced one because they will typically appeal to different audiences, or have a conceptual one concurrent with a more detailed, practical one.
That kind of helps for the people who are coming there for just the basic introduction to automation. They're not really, those sessions are not competing with another basic introductory sessions. That kind of really helps the audience a whole lot.
Right, exactly. So attendees should really expect something for everyone or pretty much everyone at the automation level. We are going to get a lot of conceptual information. We're also going to get some case study like information, but also things that you can pick up and start doing your next day at work. You go back on Friday, you go back on Monday, whatever it is. You can pick up one or two nuggets and actually start using those when you sit down at your desk the next day you're back at work. And that was something Jay Phillips had brought up to me in New Orleans, was so much of the content was conceptual that even if you were in a position to make the decision to say, hey, we're going to change our conceptual approach to automation or to testing to whichever particular session you were in, that's not anything you can turn on a dime and do. That's something that takes a while to turn that boat around because you've already got something going in a particular direction. And also a lot of the people that come are not the decision makers. So they can bring these ideas back, but then they have to try to sell these ideas to the decision makers. It's not stuff that betters their life day one. So we wanted to focus on getting at least a little bit of that in the automation track as well.
I'm actually glad you talked about this because, frankly, I wasn't there at the New Orleans conference. But I do remember that this time when we were having the discussions, you were speaking like, let's not put this session here. Let's put this automation one, which is more basic. Let's do it earlier in the day so that once they've gone through this particular session, it will help them to better grasp the next session, which is maybe next day or same day in the later half.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we've gotten some good feedback on that since we started making those changes.
Very nice.
So, and as far as who's best suited for which session, in general, most people will get something from each of the sessions. But if you're new to automation, sessions like Kristen Wiedemann's Automation for the People would probably be a good one to attend. Also, mm-hmm. the workshop, The Practical Process of Implementation of Test Automation by Jim Hazen, and yeah. Dave Hafner's two Selenium-based workshops. Those would be good for people who don't have a lot of experience or are just getting into it. I think those are looking at the abstracts and actually having talked to Jim about his, these would be good, hey, I'm new, I need to learn how to do this stuff type of sessions. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for more strategic or leadership type things, Lee Barnes's Don't Be Another Statistic and Jim Hazen's Demystifying the Test Automation Pyramid would probably be good candidates for you as well. And then if you really want to be closer to the cutting edge, evolution, getting more out of your current initiative. I personally am very excited about Harry Robinson's Amplify Your Test Effectiveness with High Volume Automation. The high volume automation is something that I'm very interested in. I've seen it work for me. We've done some very rudimentary versions of it, both at GameStop and at Mad Assets, and it pays big dividends on that. And the interesting thing to note here is that this is not load or performance testing. This is not the James Pulley or the Mark Tomlinson world. This is a lot of times repurposing things you already have to just increase the volume of the scripts and the checking that you're doing on the piece of software that you're testing in general. So this mm-hmm. this is a very interesting approach. There have not been a lot of things written about it recently, or until recently. Previously, it was pretty much just Kim Kaner's stuff, and then the presentations by Andy Tinkham. But I'm very interested to see this.
Wow. And actually, the way you made it sound, even I'm not really doing much of automation these days, but I'm so interested now in these sessions. Thank you for that. Yeah, I guess you also had you also have two sessions. One is the automation challenges, which is a roundtable discussion, and then another one is I'm hunting Sasquatch, finding intermittent issues using periodic automation. But I believe you're unsure of your availability for the conference, right?
Yeah, so disclaimer before we talk about those is I've had some back surgery and I will need to be cleared by the doctor in order to lift a suitcase and get on an airplane. So hopefully, he said probably, but they won't know for another about 3 weeks before I'll fully be able to commit. But those sessions, thank you very much. Those sessions, I think, are going to be very interesting. The Automation Challenges Roundtable always, it gets good ratings and people are very interactive in there. I tend not to speak very much in there other than to sort of set the stage and then move the conversation on a little bit. And it's been very successful that way, I think. The other session that I have about finding Sasquatch is using...
Oh, just before you... explain this session, let me tell you, I did not know what a Sasquatch is, so I had to figure out what it is. And when I realized that, I'm like, oh, okay, so you have found something that people don't believe in, but you know you have seen it. So
something
like
along those lines, exactly.
Yeah. I would like to hear about it.
Okay, so the other one, the hunting Sasquatch, was based off of an actual thing that we found when I was at GameStop, and I sat and I thought, hey, you know what? This is a bigger class of issues and a bigger class of bugs that are out there. So I built this presentation around it. And the original version of the presentation was short. I wasn't very happy with it. And then I put together that we were actually using some concepts from high volume automation testing without even really knowing it. So I retooled the whole presentation and included some of the very high-level concepts of high-volume automation testing in there and how they applied to the actual case study and the actual events that took place at GameStop.
Oh, great. That's great input. Seriously praying for you to be there. We don't want to miss this session for sure.
Well, thank you very much.
So, Paul, let's step away from the conference for a second and let's just talk about automation in general in the real world. So what do you see as the role of automation and the tools in the testing world all across?
how I see it should be is, and this is a sort of a motto that I've had ever since my first couple of years in doing automation, is that if you're a tester, the tool should help you do your job. They should not be your job. Now, I'm on an automation team. I run an automation team. So the tool is our job, but we're not testers. We provide those tools and those frameworks to our test team so that they can be either more effective or more efficient at their job.
Right.
So that's my main goal there. And then looking at automation as a what can it do, how should we think about it, 100% automation is not feasible. There are things that we cannot automate in testing, and there are things that we should not automate because the value is not there. So if we agree that 100% automation isn't feasible, then we need to make a decision on what is feasible and work toward that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we spend too much focus on automating test cases and regression testing. To me, writing a script that came from some sort of written down test case, or hey, I've got my regression testing suite and I want to turn that into something that happens automatically, those are implementations of automation. Those are not automation. I like to think of automation as applying technology in order to help testers do their job. And if writing a little smoke suite that runs after every continuous integration build, if that's the high value proposition, then let's do that. But if you've got a tester spending an hour a day turning a crank, basically, something that, hey, I need to set up all this database, or I need to create all this data, or I need to create all these user IDs, and it takes them an hour a day to do that, you know, it might be worth spending a few hours scripting that out, and then that human doesn't have to do that. They can take that 5 hours a week, more than half a day a week, they can get back and add testing coverage and do something that's more human suitable. And that is what I think the role of automation is.
You've actually brought out a very valid point there. But a lot of times people actually look at automation as something like a red button. You just press it, everything gets done. And here you are, a set of results, and you'll get to know what failed, what passed, and everything is fine, which is not the way automation works. But since the two, and we like to say that, you know what, automation is only here for supporting the testing. It is not the actual testing. But then the management says that, oh, the tools are so expensive, and so it has to cut down some other cost, and we need to look at the ROI of this investment. What is the returns if we do buy some tool? So how do you think one should calculate, or should one calculate, the ROI for automation?
So I used to think that you did, but now I think that you don't.
Okay.
So
that's the trend I see everywhere. So yes, go ahead.
So Dawn Haynes wrote an article called "There Ain't No ROI in Testing." And if you read her article, it explains that ROI, return on investment, is a specific financial accounting term. And it means certain things to people who have that kind of a background.
Right.
And since testing is an expense and automation is basically force multiplying on testing, there's really no ROI in automation. In the strictest sense, this is not an investment. If we're looking for a monetary value to put on automation, then something like a cost-benefit analysis would be a better way to go. And I'm no financial guy, so my understanding of cost-benefit analysis is very minimal. But it's something that sort of intrigues me on how to put monetary value on certain things. But for automation, what I like to talk about instead of ROI, I like to talk about value. What's the value that's being brought to the table by a particular initiative? And value is made up of many different facets. It could be opportunity cost. It could be how much coverage have you added, and therefore you can give better information to the product team regarding risk on whether we should deliver this product or not. It can help speed to market in some cases, and in some cases there is some time saved, but really it's less around time saved most of the time, as now I can cover more things. Because usually you have a million things to do in a testing cycle, and you get to 100,000 of them, you know, maybe.
Right.
So
right.
Automation is, hey, of that 100,000, which ones can a computer do for you or help you do so that you can get into that next set of stuff? And all these things are company or team or organization specific. What one team considers valuable, another may not. So then they shouldn't do that same thing. They should do something else with their quote automation dollars.
That's a perfect way of actually saying it. That's a good way of saying it. Because a lot of times when we look at ROI, I have literally seen Excel sheets where it says, okay, after cycle number N, it's got to be break even. And there onwards, we're going to save money of the testing because of automation. What they lose focus on is actually what you pointed out rightly, saying opportunity cost. There are a lot of test coverage that can be actually added through automation, which people with narrow focus on just the money miss, that it's adding value to testing. It's not just about money.
Right. And when people ask about ROI, I think what they really want to know in a lot of cases is, when is this going to pay for itself? And how is it going to pay for itself? And sometimes it's really easy. An example that I have at MedAssets was there's another tool that the teams use to do some test-related activities. And what it does is it compares what the results of these thousands of calculations to this golden data, this preset data. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a product change that was made, and instead of getting 0.00 out for some values, now you got a null out. But it wasn't for all values. It was just for some. Based on the number of these golden files, the test architect said it's going to be 4 to 6 weeks of manual effort to go through and figure out all of these instances and make the changes. Can you help us? So we spent a day or a day and a half building a script to do that work for them. And we ran it a couple of times and it worked, and then we didn't need it anymore. We threw it away. So how quickly did that pay for itself? That's a weird question, right? Because it didn't really pay for itself so much as it avoided 4 to 6 weeks of human effort, where those humans can now go spend that time doing something else, like increasing test coverage.
Yeah. I believe that's the part, the second half of your answer, that's the part that a lot of people miss. They do look at, okay, so now since I have been able to script it, it's going to test it, and we will be able to cut down on 3 more testers. So how do you see the word context fit in the automation world? Like it's a big term in the testing world. We have a lot of context-driven sessions, context-driven testing sessions coming up in this STP. Like last STP, we started bringing in a lot of exploratory testing and context-driven testing sessions. We had James Bach there. And even this time, we have quite a few sessions around them. So how do you see the word context fit in the automation world?
So I cannot speak from a position of authority with or even a position of experience with the formal notion of context-driven testing. But in terms of context and what it means to me with respect to automation is being appropriate. I'm a big fan of the word appropriate. If it is appropriate to script out 100 regression testing scripts because you already know that really the people that are running those today are just pushing the buttons and they need to be doing something else, then perhaps that is correct in that context. But in a place where regression testing is, we have a rough charter on how we go through and look for regressions, perhaps a different type of tooling might be appropriate there. Perhaps some of the high volume automation, perhaps some of the things that we call automation assist, like context-sensitive diffs or ID generators or data generators. To me, that's all automation because a human is not performing that activity. They're kicking it off. They're saying, hey, go generate those things for me, or hey, perform this high-volume testing for me. But at the end, the people who are actually – what's actually coming back with this is good, this is bad, this is something we need to alert someone about – the humans are making those decisions based on the data that the automation is supplying. So really, I think for me, context is equal to appropriate. So we should be doing things that are appropriate and in a different context, in a different setting, with a different frame of reference, we might do something different.
Very well said. So before I let you go, Paul, let me bring you back to STP and ask you one more question. I've seen you throughout at STP. Like ever since I got associated with STP, you were already there. You were pretty much engaged. You were taking care of a few things. You were speaking there. So you've been, something is bringing you back to STP again and again. And I would like for you to tell the audience about the overall program or STP as a conference? Like, why should they attend it? What drives you to the conference, and what should they look at the conference as their takeaway?
Well, the main reason I keep coming back is because you keep accepting my papers.
That's as simple, right?
Joking aside,
that was good.
Joking aside, my first one was spring 2013, I think, in San Diego, and I got lucky. It was my first national submission. I said, you know what, I'm going to send this out. They're going to reject it, but at least maybe I'll get some feedback to say, here, mm-hmm. change your abstract this way, or our conference is not the right audience for you. But I got accepted, and it was mm-hmm. great. I got a good response. Then I was accepted again a year later in New Orleans. And at that point, that's when Peggy and Rick and Mark Tomlinson said, hey, why don't you come and join this community advisory board with us? And that's how I got even more deeply engaged with STPCon. And then when the CAB completed its work, I've kind of stayed on as an advisor and like Mike Lyles' term, the designer of the automation sessions. So what I like about STPCon is that it's big enough, but it's not too big. So there are a lot of attendees there. You can network. We have a lot of sessions, and the focus of making it sort of that next step up where, yeah, you know what, we've got some introductory stuff for the people coming in, but we've really got some other intermediate stuff. We're focusing on that next level up, and then we have some advanced concepts too. I can go to STPCon, and like for the last two or three, there weren't any session blocks where I couldn't find at least one thing that interested me. And wow. The one in Boston, there were several slots where I had to pick between two or three simply because wow. there were so many that I wanted to see at the same time. Oh, so that kind of a thing is what keeps me coming back.
It was awesome at Boston, yes. I can totally relate to what you're saying because that keeps me bringing back to STP too. Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you for your time and for being a great guest on the show. I really loved interviewing you.
Thank you.
Everyone out there, thanks for listening. Feel free to message us or tweet us if you have any comments to share. Also, if you're not already scheduled for the conference, I strongly encourage you to get yourself registered. Go to stpcon.com and pick one of the several options available. So looking forward to see you all at the upcoming STP at San Francisco. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of STP Radio. Stay tuned for more episodes, and don't forget to check out stpcon.com to learn more about the conference being held at the Westin San Francisco Airport Hotel, April 4th through 7th.